The Zone.
We're at the midday on 80, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. And Coach Mack joins us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947, online at FBHP.com. The crew is all here as we say hello to Coach Dave McGinnis. Mack, good morning.
Morning, guys. Hope everybody's doing well.
Doing very well. You say pecan, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's pecan. Yes.
Chad, your absolutely. Thoughts?
Like I said, I can't disagree with him because I say it two different ways. If you put pie at the end of it, my inclination is to say pecan pie, but if I'm just saying it by itself, I say pecan. So I agree with him on that.
We may be able to get back into this at 11:15 or so. We're having a ton of people chime in with examples of words that we can discuss. Jeff?
Terry McCormick actually just texted me and had a great one. Is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a very good
that's
one.
That's a really good one. He just wrote, and it was just one word. He sent Caribbean, which yeah, I say Caribbean, obviously, by reading that.
If you want to have a real pecan discussion, as I told you right before we jumped on this, I've got a friend that's got a huge pecan farm down in Texas. He could give you the whole rundown. I've never heard him say pecan once in my life.
Who does Coach Mack know? Everyone, including a pecan farmer.
Well, I know Mack. I know Michael B. Adams, I promise you that, in College Station, Texas.
Mack, we're going to get to the draft, and I've got some scenarios where I'm going to throw out later this hour a position of where Mack is on a team in drafting, whether it's first round, third round, wherever it may be, a position of need, and the player he's standing on the table for of where he thinks they'll be falling and slotted in the draft. But first, the matter that everyone wants to know, what is Party Cove like in the Ozarks, because you've been?
Especially the 4th of July. I mean, it is the furthest thing from social distancing you'll ever get in your life. I mean, it is, you know, I coached at the University of Missouri for 3 years, you know, as a 25-year-old secondary coach, and a lot of alums have places down there on Lake of the Ozarks. So you can imagine, it is live and in color. I can promise you that. Now, watching the series on Netflix, Ozark, and you're the one that told me this, Hutt, because when I'm watching it, I didn't quite recognize it. That's not really filmed at Lake of the Ozarks. You know, you know that. But the whole Party Cove thing, that's 100% true, especially on the 4th of July.
It's yet another show that's filmed in Georgia.
Yeah, you told me that.
It's amazing. I guess because the taxes and the film commission in Georgia, it just makes it so much more affordable to shoot there. But yeah, it's all the movies and television shows that are in Georgia. It's incredible to see how many are shot there.
Yeah, but they are very accurate in one thing in that show, Party Cove.
Coach Mack with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Mack, let's hit some of the news of the week and look at like, for instance, Jadeveon Clowney, the Titans. Had the conference call yesterday. He was brought up in that. I'm curious from your perspective, from Clowney, Logan Ryan, if you get past the first wave of free agency and you're unsigned, does it actually benefit you to just go ahead and wait until football resumes? Because right now, if you signed, you'd be sitting at home anyway. And my guess is the leverage gets better as the season gets closer, not right now.
Well, let's talk league perspective first of all. I mean, you know, if you're not signed through that first wave and you're a veteran proven player, then clearly it's about money. I mean, that's what it's about. Now, of course, it's not everybody doesn't fit everywhere, but as far as just at the bottom line of it, most of the time for veteran players that are proven players, that are good players, that aren't injured or damaged players, then it's about, you know, it's about the money. If you want to go specifically to the Titans with these two, I mean, they're in a unique situation with both of these guys, because anybody else except the Titans that were to sign one of these guys, except for places that they had been, I mean, it might be a deterrent because they weren't able to come in and be there and start, you know, learning the system. Both of these guys defensively know this system as well as anybody. So that's not a deterrent right there. So what you're talking about, probably, you're talking about money, you're talking about salary cap fit, and then you're talking about scheme fit. And for both of these players, clearly the scheme fit things out of it because they both fit this scheme. So you're talking about salary cap implications and you're talking about contract.
Kamale Correa back in the mix, and he was one that we had mentioned with you weeks ago for depth purposes and just all-out effort. He's a good piece to their pass rush puzzle.
Well, I think so. And, I mean, he was productive, you know, last year. I mean, he played a pretty high percentage of the snaps. I think he played over 40% of the snaps last year. And then, you know, he had a nice productive run towards the end there, you know, during the playoff run. The thing about him is, look, guys, and everybody is talking about the elite pass rusher. And I think all of us know, and our listeners are sophisticated enough to know, I've been on teams with elite pass rushers. But to get those elite pass rushers, you had to draft them in the first round, and you usually have to draft them very early in the first round. I drafted Simeon Rice, you know, when I was the defensive coordinator, first-year coordinator, you know, at the Arizona Cardinals. But we had to – I mean, we were a bad team. That's normally why you get a new job. It's a bad team, so we had the number six pick. I mean, so you've got to draft those guys in the first round. I've been with Robert Quinn, who was a first-round pick that dropped in the first round because of a medical issue there at North Carolina, but he was still a first-round pick even with that type of issue. We know what Javon Kearse was here, and he fell a little lower, but still, it's a first-round pick. Those guys don't last. And so if you're not going to have one of those, then your next best option is to get a group of people that have pass rush skills and have tool sets that you can rush and you can put packages together and go in waves, you know, at the quarterback when you need to put pressure on him. And again, it's not all about sacks, guys, as you well know. The pressure part of it is huge. And so if you don't have one dominant guy, then do it with numbers.
There isn't going to be a curse at 29, and they're going to have other needs here. I mean, cornerback is a problem. So if we look at that group now, and I'm really big on the re-signing of Correa because the second half of Correa's season really put up arrow on him.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
Landry, Beasley, Correa as the top three. Roberson, Gilbert, Smith, on the other side of the line, maybe. What do we think of that now as the group you're talking about where you would come in waves as opposed to, having a premier guy out there leading? I can't believe I'm saying it. But given the holes at other places, I feel okay about that group, particularly if Simmons is doing his thing from the inside.
There you go, Paul. And that was the caveat I was going to add to the end of that. I agree with your premise. I really do, because that's the way you have to put a team together, because you know you need more than one position on any football team. But what you're saying, the scenario is correct. But also with what you're able to do pressure-wise up inside, because it all has to go together. Look, if that's a big if, a big IF, Clowney were to end up on this football team, I mean, he would be a guy that would be that Vrabel. He's already proven how he would use him up and down the line of scrimmage to be a major disruptor. And as I said, Clowney has never been a big bend-the-edge guy, but he's been a tremendous disruptor to the quarterback from a lot of different spots. And so I agree with your premise, and I think that what they will do, if this is the group they end up with to go after the quarterback, there will be ways they will do it. And if everyone stays healthy, which is a big if through 17 weeks in the National Football League, hopefully that we have, well, then you've got some fresh legs going in at waves. And most of the time, if you're really a good pressure team, you're sending people in waves anyway.
Coming up with Coach Dave McGinnis, players he would stand on the table for if he's in a draft room. And let me give you a for instance. Middle of the first round, a team is looking at interior defensive linemen. Who would Mac recommend? Second round, a team in need of a running back. Offensive tackles, heavy in the first round. But let's assume for this exercise, Mac's team doesn't hold a first round pick, but they've got to have a tackle. Who's the second round guy? That's all coming up. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
You know what? They may not be playing the games, but we're still talking sports.
the sports station, 104.5 The Zone.
Coach Mac on with us each and every Thursday morning here on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Coach Mac presented each and every week, and every time you hear him on 104.5 The Zone, by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Protecting Tennesseans since 1947, online at FBHP.com. Mac, let's get into some players you would stand on the table for. I'm going to give you a scenario. You tell me the player. Middle of the first round. You're on a team, you're a part of a staff that needs an interior defensive lineman. Who are you after?
Ross Blacklock at TCU. You know, the more I look at this, and we've already decided Frog. as a staff, Frog, we've already decided as a staff that Derrick Brown and Javon Kinlaw are gone. So the next guy up on my board, over the top of Neville Gallimore, over the top of Raekwon Davis, over the top of Justin Matabuike from Texas A&M, is Ross Blacklock from TCU. And the more I watch him, I mean, the more I like him. He's got everything physically that you would want. Now, he plays for Gary Patterson in a four-point stance down there, and they move him quite a bit. They move him a lot, but look, this guy has got length. He's 6'4", 305 pounds. He's got nearly an 80-inch wingspan for arms. He ran a 4.940 at the combine. I was really impressed with him, just putting my eyes on him physically at the combine. He's got all the tools you want. He's got size. He's got length. He's got power. And he's got lower body flexibility for a big man, you know, that I really like. Now, they two-gapped him some out of that four-point stance on a zero nose, some at TCU. But you get him in a three-point stance. I don't care whether it's a right or a left-handed three-point stance, and start getting some nuances of coming off in that stance, I think you've got something. I think his skills are really good. And he'll learn. He'll learn a little bit more. A lot of guys in college, because they're bigger than some of the people they play against, guys don't process real well. They just think they can do it with all physical mass, these bigger guys. Once his processing skills get up to speed with his physical skills, this is the guy I would stand on the table for in the middle of the first round. Is Ross Blacklock from TCU. Now, the one caveat, again, we're all in this meeting, so, you know, now, if we only got a few people in the room, like I think they're going to have, but you've still got your medical reports on all of these people. He missed 2018 with an Achilles, all right? So that will figure into the equation some, but this is the guy that I'm betting on here.
Second round, your team is in need of a running back.
All right, look, I'm looking at the running backs, and I'm not thinking that there's, other than DeAndre Swift, I'm not thinking there will be a running back that will go in the first round, okay, in my opinion. So you're going to have your choice. But say I'm in the middle of the second round, I'm picking commensurate with where I was picking in the first round. I'm assuming Jonathan Taylor is gone. I'm assuming J.K. Dobbins is gone. The guy that I've got my eye on that I really like as a football player, and the more you watch him, I mean, I think you guys know it, and our listeners know it too. We are playing football, and so tape and how they perform in football games is important. I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire from LSU. Okay, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's 5'7 and change, 208 pounds. He's really light on his feet. He's quick to accelerate. He's low built. He's a jump cutter. He's got extremely, extremely impressive contact balance. Okay, he's not dynamic, but he's smooth. He's got soft hands. All right, and this kid can run a route tree. They ran him with flats, corners, slants, and he is physically, physically tough. His contact balance is really, really good. And if I want a complimentary back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is my guy. Now, he doesn't have long speed. If he gets out and breaks it out in the open, I mean, he ran 4.6 at the combine. That doesn't bother me, but I think this guy is an excellent, excellent, in my humble opinion, in the middle of the second round, if I'm looking for a complimentary back, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire that wore number 22 there at LSU.
Coach, you mentioned it, not dynamic, but the word that jumps out to me, and I watched a lot of LSU this past season when watching Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is different. There's a difference about his game, and he's a bit unique in terms of matchups and how he plays the game. Is that what you see with him also, that it's in terms of most running backs you see out there, because he's so low built and short and the way he moves, it's a little bit different from a lot of other running backs in this draft?
Chad, I think that's a really good description. I mean, it really is, because, you know, he doesn't have length. He doesn't play with length, but you're right. He is different, but he is productive. And the thing that jumps out to me is he's ultra, ultra competitive. I mean, he's ultra competitive, and he may not get the home run for you, but if you need the first down, or you need the secured catch, or you need somebody to be able to come in there and make somebody miss in a short space on a third down, say on a lag draw or some type of thing like that, but he makes it happen. I mean, he's a dynamic player because he's a productive player with the ball in his hands. Now, he's going to have limitations because he is 5'7 and change. I mean, I said that from the start, but I like your description. He is different, but he's productive.
Do you think he could graduate into a feature back?
No, I don't think so. I mean, not in my opinion. You know, I don't. If I'm looking for a second back, and I think I'd have to go higher than the middle of the second round. If we're going to the top of the second round, that is a featured back, but you could bounce back and forth, then you're looking at the Jonathan Taylor. I'm a Taylor fan out of Wisconsin, and I know he's got a lot of tread worn off his tires because of the over 900 carries that he had there at Wisconsin. But this guy's a big beast now that can run. I mean, you talk about an impressive performance just physically, you know, at the combine. But he also, you put on the tape, I mean, he can run. Now, he can run away from people and do things. And he's got soft hands. They didn't throw it to him a lot, but that guy could be a feature back, in my opinion.
I'm liking the exercise, but I want to stray from it for a second. So,
okay.
I'm now envisioning this being the Titans choosing a back in the second round who can be the third down back for now, but maybe in a year or two is the back. Who are you standing on the table for that?
Now, you know what? One of my guys that I think would probably be there that I really like is Cam Akers out of Florida State. I mean, I like Cam Akers. He's got size. He's got power. He's got athleticism. Ran 4.47, you know, at the combine. And to me, his ceiling is up there. Florida State was terrible this year, guys. Let's just be honest. They were terrible. Their scheme was not good. The talent around him and their performance was not good. But he – no, look, he needs to develop some. His passing down skills, I think. But I don't think that Cam Akers, just again, in my view and in my opinion of watching tape on him, I don't think he has any physical limitations. I think his limitations were where he was playing and the environment that he was in. I like Cam Akers.
Mac, let's go to offensive tackle, because I know you've told us you think there could be 4 to 5 offensive tackles in the first round of this draft, but let's put you in a position where your team is in need of a tackle, a young tackle, but you don't have a first round pick. Who are you looking for in the second round?
Yeah, Hutt. All right, let's talk about the guys I expect to be gone. If we're all sitting in the draft room together, they're going to start ticking these names off in the first round. Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs, Andrew Thomas out of Georgia, Mekhi Becton out of Louisville. Now it just depends on what you want, what flavor you want, okay? Here's what I'm going to do. Let's do this exercise. All of us are in the draft room, all right, right now, and by really great chance and a great fortune, these two guys fall to us. I'm going to read my report on these two guys, and you tell me which one of these guys you guys would pick, all right?
Okay.
First one is Austin Jackson out of USC, 6'6", 310 pounds, number 73. Now, he's a junior coming out. He's got size, he's got length, he's got functional mass, he's got decent footwork. We're talking about a 6'6 guy, 310 pounds. He can move and pull in space. He's got a really good kick set, which means, you know, on passes, that he's got a good kick set for a good base. He doesn't have very powerful hands. He lets guys into his chest right now. And, of course, now we'll start talking about which one of you are the coaches that are going to teach him how to do that properly. But he rarely sustains with power, but he's very athletic. Right now, to me, he's got tremendous tools. You'd like to see a little bit more production, but it's all there, okay? And so what he needs to add to me, just watching him, is more mass and strength, okay? Now, the next guy that's sitting right there with us, looking right at him, is Josh Jones out of Houston. 6'5", 311 pounds, number 74. Now, he's a redshirt senior, so he's played a little bit longer, all right? He's got some really, to me, intriguing physical strength. He's got length for the edge. He's got raw physical skills to be developed, okay? His hands aren't the best, but he punches some, a little more than Jackson to me. He needs work from a technique, stand-up point in all phases. But his pluses, height, weight, arm length, they're all pluses. He's a four-year starter. His footwork needs a little bit more work. I think he's got a high upside. Which one you guys want?
Who's better in the zone blocking scheme?
Well, to me, you've got they can both Jones. Zone block because they're both athletic enough to zone block.
In all of the projections, I've seen Jackson as your left tackle. Not when I say your, I say a team's left tackle. He's only 20 years old. Did you say that?
Yeah, he's a junior. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a young guy. I tend to lean towards USC's Austin Jackson.
Okay, Paul.
Off your description, I tend to lean Jones, but my one thing here is I want the guy who's played against better competition more.
Yeah, there you go.
And that'd be Jackson.
I tend to have a big school bias, better competition bias with players. And given your description, Coach, of both of these prospects and what they bring to the table, it's so close that I would go tie to the player who played at USC in the Pac-12. So I'm going Austin Jackson also.
That's a really good draft room discussion. And then and this, you know, this will go on. Now, if only one of them's there, well, then the choice is easy for you if that's where you're going. But I think those are the type of discussions that will be going on in draft rooms.
Mac, we were chatting with one of the draft analysts at the Combine. Now, forgive me for not remembering who this was, but he said that Jackson donated his bone marrow to his sister, and that was one of the reasons why they felt like he lost some of his strength last year. Had you heard that?
Well, that would make sense. No, I have not heard that.
Okay.
But that would make sense.
Yeah. Well, it's a good exercise, and we'll do this from week to week with Coach Mack, where we'll give scenarios, and he will give us his thoughts on who he's on the table for. When we come back, though, these stay-at-home mandates are hurting more than just the teams with new quarterbacks. It's an even playing field, yes, and everyone's playing by the same rules. But, for instance, Drew Brees in the Saints offense should be fine. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, no problem. But there are offenses across the league that are going to struggle. And, namely, it's the second-year quarterbacks when they're supposed to make that big jump from year one to year two. We'll get Mac's thoughts on second-year QBs, but also those quarterbacks with new head coaches, because there are a couple of them. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Non-stop sports talk, 6 a.m. till 7 p.m. every weekday. Nashville's number one sports station, 104.5 The Zone.
Coach Mack with us on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. He's presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947, online at fbhp.com. Mack, the stay-at-home mandate's affecting all teams the same way. I mean, that we know about the contact and the lack of ability to go into the facilities right now. But those second-year guys, Minshew, Haskins, Daniel Jones, this is always a big offseason for second-year quarterbacks because of that extra layer of offense that they're working on. Plus, they're polishing their rapport with receivers, and that's not happening this year. Those year two players are the ones really feeling a setback, I would have to imagine.
No, you're absolutely right, Hutt. And think about it. I mean, if you're a second-year quarterback that's trying to get your feet on the ground, I mean, this usually is everybody talks about that jump that you make, the improvements that you made because you just have figured out what playing in the National Football League is overall. But then you compartmentalize it down to playing quarterback in the National Football League, everything that encompasses. The second year is big, and the second year off season is really big. And then you compound that with what you said earlier in the segment before we went off the air, before we came back today, is a new head coach. Say you've got a new head coach and you're a second year quarterback. Now you're not only a second year quarterback. You're basically a first-year quarterback for that head coach and that scheme. So that's a double whammy. This, we are in different territory right now, guys. And those scenarios, when you start to zero it down and start to put a microscope and start to laser in on everything that this is going to encompass, this encompasses much more than not being able to have, you know, your draft or your rookie class in early and start to teach them. You still have young players on your squad that you still need to get up to speed to the next level of the NFL development. And then if you have a new head coach with a second year quarterback, you've compounded a lot of issues.
Well, and just to go and pinpoint further, there are different degrees of challenges, even with the new head coaches with those second year quarterbacks, because Joe Judge in New York knows that Daniel Jones is the guy. But in Washington, consider the situation where they need to gauge Dwayne Haskins with a new coaching staff. They have the second overall pick in this draft, but they have to figure out if Haskins is their future without the new coaches ever working with him. I mean, that is a crazy situation.
Yeah, well, you guys met Ron Rivera there at the Combine when he came on and did a segment with you guys there at the Combine. And so, I mean, Ron is a real forward-thinking guy, and he's an intelligent guy. And, I mean, and he's not a rookie head coach. He's an established head coach in the National Football League. And he is faced with this reality. He really is. He's faced with this reality because now he has got to go on what he has seen, what he has heard. Who does he trust in the building, you know, to tell him this really is your guy? I mean, who is he able to trust with what the process was in bringing him in there during the draft? So, I mean, Ron's in a very, very different situation, because at least I think the franchise in New York with Daniel Jones, they're set on the fact that he is the quarterback. He is that guy. They've made that decision.
Coach Mike Vrabel said yesterday that there's no excuses. You know, that him and his staff, that they're working, they're going under the assumption football is going to happen just like normal, and whatever the rules are and whatever they're told, that's what they're going to abide by, and they're going to get the job done. How important is that mindset right now? Because there's a lot of people who aren't happy to be at home. They're out of their daily routine. This isn't ideal from a work standpoint for a lot of people. But to fight the urge to try to create excuses and to change the job you're doing, and that's exactly the message Mike Vrabel was delivering. But how important is that for every staff across the league right now?
Chad, that's a great point. And it was a great point by Coach Vrabel. I mean, it's imperative. I mean, it is imperative, because you've got to step up and you have to make it work. But as a leader, as a head coach, you know, I've been a head coach and through some tough times, you have got to present here's how we're going to make this work. Here is our solutions. And if they're not all quite right, we will work through this, but it does no good at all. Zero to bitch about what the circumstances are. You've got to figure out ways to make the circumstances work in your favor, because at the end of the day, guys, I don't know when this is going to be over and we're going to be back to the lives that we all knew before all of this pandemic came down on us. When the National Football League starts, there's going to be one thing that matters: winning games. And so everything that you do as a head coach, and then you've got to filter through your entire organization, and it comes from the general manager too, and the ownership. Whatever we've got to do, we have to do, but we've got to still, everything has got to culminate in the fact that when we all do get back together, we've given ourselves the best chance during this time to win games.
For more Titans and NFL conversation with Dave McGinnis, download the official Titans podcast. Look for the OTP wherever you download your podcasts. And Mac, you guys have been doing that via Zoom, is that right?
Well, we tried the Zoom out. We've been doing it on Skype, but then we tried Zoom. I mean, I heard you say you're going to use Zoom for your midday Greek week mixer. you guys are going to use Zoom. Zoom. And again, as I said, I love all the technology. I just don't like it when it doesn't work. But with that Zoom, I mean, you get a lot of people on that thing. And so I think that's a great idea.
Final thing for you. Tua Tagovailoa says he's 100% and he could play today if needed. It's difficult to say, well, I'll call your bluff on that. But if I'm him, I'm saying the same thing, because he's in an offseason now after he's done all the physicals at the Combine. And he's another month removed from that, where there's no way they can test him right now.
You know, why would you say anything different? You know, right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you saw him on that little video clip, you know, working out with Dilfer up there at Lipscomb. I mean, but why would you say anything different? And that's why I say we are in some different times right now. All the years I've been in the league, all the draft periods like this that I've gone through pre-draft, I've never seen anything like this. So, but I don't blame Tua. It's exactly what I'd say too. I'm great. Let's go.
How many phone calls did you take this week on coaches around the league getting your opinion on free agent players in the second tier of free agency or draft assumptions?
Did a lot of what we just did. Throughout some positions. Let me just say this. I've got unlimited mileage on my Verizon plan, and I went over it.
Mac, thank you. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it,
guys. Thanks, guys. See you. Have a good day.
Thanks, Coach.
Coach Mac, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947, online FBHP.com.
Mac let the cat out of the bag. Details to come, but we're having a party.
Oh, yes, we are. And we will discuss big takeaways from Mike Vrabel and John Robinson's teleconferences yesterday. We've got a list in front of us that we'll go through to begin the second hour, just like that, hour one in the books. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.